I replaced all my Lululemon shorts with Bird Dogs. Bird Dog shorts do the exact same thing, but fit way better. They actually look like khaki shorts, so I can wear them all day, for my morning hike or bike ride to the bar. I can't stop wearing them. Join over 1 million guys who discovered the best shorts on the market. Go to birddogs.com/MLB and enter promo code baseball for a free baseball hat with your order. That's birddogs.com/MLB. Promo code baseball for a free hat. You won't want to take your Bird Dogs off. We promise you.
Yo, yo, away we go. Hour number two of our radio program. That's right. It is a Zach Gelb, coast to coast on CBS Sports Radio. All righty. How about Dalvin Cook? He's cooking up some drama. He says, along with Adam Schefter on the Adam Schefter podcast, that he wants to play with DeAndre Hopkins this season, both free agents, and it would be epic. Let's listen up.
He was one of those guys that I was going to reach out to because, like, I know he got the same mindset as me. Like, we trying to go win. We trying to get on the roster and trying to go contend. So if we can't end up on the same roster and be on the same team, you know, that'll be the beauty of the situation. You know, we know what we trying to come do and what we bring to the team. So if we end up on the same roster, man, that'll be some epic.
Do you want me to give you something misleading, Hickey? Or do you want me to give you the truth here? What do you want first? Do you want the misleading part of my response or the truth?
Let's go misleading first, truth second.
Did you hear what Jeremy Fowler had to say about who that one team is that could potentially be interested in both and land both?
I did not.
He was talking about the New England Patriots.
Of course, why not?
He said they already had a need for DeAndre Hopkins. DeAndre Hopkins already been in the facility as he was there. What was that, last Thursday, last week? And then he said, even though they have Ramondre Stevenson, one person said to him, wouldn't shock him if they ended up getting on in on Dalvin Cook. So that's the misleading part of that. Now, can I give you the reality part of it?
Let's go back to reality.
It's nice to say if you are a Dalvin Cook, oh yeah, it'd be great. It'd be a dream. It would be epic if I could play with DeAndre Hopkins. But this late in the game, how many teams, when you hear that DeAndre Hopkins, and I don't know if he's going to get it, but he wants the Odell Beckham Jr. deal, which is $15 million guaranteed and up to incentives, $18 million on a one-year deal. When you hear that, and then you also hear other things about Dalvin Cook, how he wants like $10 million a year. This late in the game, I know we look at salary cap and we go, oh, it's just a number. You get guys to restructure, move money around, and teams have been able to dance through the hula hoops in order to make sure that they get the players that they want. But the fact that it's already June 20th right now, who's going to have the salary cap space if you're going to actually pay DeAndre Hopkins and Dalvin Cook close to what they want? Even if not exactly what they want, close to what they want, you're going to need both those guys to start disliking money and hating money in order to find a way to get both on the roster. Now, I don't think they're both going to get what they're setting their sights out to be, but it's about as getting as close as you can to that number, I think, for both those players if you're only signing a one-year deal. And if you're going to get somewhere in the ballpark, somewhere close to what they want, I don't see how you're going to find a way to get both of those players on the same team. Good job by Dalvin Cook. As you stir up the drama pod and you have some fun with that and you throw that idea out there to put your name even more so in the news, but that's not going to happen with Dalvin Cook and DeAndre Hopkins on the same team. Now, if they want to start hating money and they want to go join my team, the New England Patriots, two thumbs up. You know what? If you guys need a ride to the airport, because money could be a little bit thin on the pay cut that you're going to have to take, I'll gladly offer up my services. I actually parked enough cars last week at Bob's Bar when I lost my bet on the DA show. I will gladly continue the valet stand and maybe be a personal driver for both Dalvin Cook and DeAndre Hopkins to make sure that they get to beautiful Foxborough.
You know, props to you. Putting your money where your mouth is. You will spend your hard-earned money to drive these two fellas to the airport, get them to, what's that, Logan Airport? Hopefully,
yeah, in Boston.
Weapon free.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
And sign with the Patriots.
Now, I don't know exactly what happened in terms of what his camp is starting to say, Jack Jones, how he's going to be innocent and all that stuff. When you bring, and I got this story right, allegedly he brought two guns, loaded guns, to an airport. How dumb are you? I don't think that's a thing, Hickey, where you go, oh, I went to go get my my gym bag or my carry-on bag, and it's in a similar bag as the two loaded guns, and I just so happened to take the wrong bag. I don't know what they're actually saying, but I saw that the attorney or the person defending him today did speak, and she was making it out to be, and I know all attorneys do this, that she was adamant, the lawyer, that he was gonna, that there's a lot of misleading things out there and the media is sensationalizing this, blah, 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 and making him out to be a victim. If that ends up being true, and I did not read through the fine details of this, I've just been reading some of the reports from afar. If, and there's a way that you get off, obviously, here, and that's for people to figure out in a litigious world. But I don't get how you talk your way out of this one. That's just me.
Especially after you're tweeting John Morant, basically, shame on you for having guns. Get your life in order. And now, a few weeks later, boom, the tables have turned, and they turned fast.
Well, I would offer to drive DeAndre Hopkins and Dalvin Cook to the airport. I will not offer my services to go to the Slammer for Jack Jones. Because, like, as you said last week, you wouldn't do well in prison. I don't think I would do well in prison either.
Wow, so no loyalty to the Patriots, huh? You wouldn't take one for the team?
I'm not going to jail.
If Bill Belichick knocks on your door... Zach, we need you here.
No, hold on. It would be like, Zach, you know, Jack got in some trouble. Zach, your name rhymes. You'll be forever a Patriot. Just go spend like maybe 30 years in the Slammer, and we'll continue to give you some updates. Maybe I'll send you some coins so you could get something from the vending machine in jail and maybe get you a little extra free time. Yeah, sorry, Bill. That would be a... I'd be Randy Jackson. That's a no for me, dog.
Not even if Jack Jones wins Super Bowl MVP in like Super Bowl 61, he's going to send the trophy, send the ring your way to jail. Maybe put Gelb next to the, at this point, seven Super Bowl championships in Gillette Stadium.
No. 30? Would you spend 30 years in jail for any one of your sports teams? Because I'm a sane individual, even though I'm sometimes zany. I know that you're nuts. And you would do some crazy things to see your sport teams win. I've already seen six championships. I'm going to sound as spoil could be. If I don't see another championship in my lifetime for my football team, I could be okay with that. I don't need to risk going to the Slammer for 30 more years.
And also, not to mention, I mean, the best part about winning is celebrating. The parade, the actual win, I won't be able to see it and or attend the parade in jail. So the best part of winning, my team winning a championship, wouldn't even get to enjoy, so... No, I would not go to jail for my team, especially for 30 years. No chance.
How about 1 year, but this is what you're going to end up having happen to you. Penn State wins a national championship. Man, what is it, April Fools? The Colts win two Super Bowls, and the Mets win a World Series.
Hopefully Jim Mercy's not listening.
So that is four championships that you get to see. Back-to-back Penn State, then the same year Mets championship, and then what was the other one that I offered you there?
Colts.
Oh, yeah.
Colts Super Bowl.
Colts.
You not to be picky here. I would like them spread out a little. I don't want one good year.
Okay.
When you win so much, it's like you can't enjoy it.
You go to jail for 1 year.
You mind solitary confinement?
No.
I'm not going to general population.
Oh, you're in general population.
Not do well there. No way. Okay. I'm out. Sorry. I guess I may die without seeing a championship again, but I will not go to jail.
I thought you would say yes for only a year. For four championships?
That's a long year. General population, no way. No way.
I thought for sure you would. It wouldn't surprise me for you.
I would do a lot of things. I would do a lot of things to have my team win a championship and for me to witness it. Going to jail is not on the list.
What body part would you get rid of in order to go see your team win four championships? I'm talking... two Colts Super Bowls, Penn State national title, and a Mets World Series.
Definitely a few toes, without a doubt.
That's not significant enough.
Well, I would not give up a foot.
How about an ear?
Can I put a plastic ear in? I guess I could.
Yeah.
What the hell? I guess how it looks.
Now, let me
I don't
ask
know.
You this.
I don't know.
Would you shave your head and you got to be bald for the rest of your life? Because I know how loyal you are to that head of hair of yours. Would you shave your hair for the rest of your life in order to get all those championships?
I think I would.
Wow.
I got a girlfriend already, so I don't have to worry about talking to chicks. So I don't really need the hair in that
she
case.
She may see you bald and say sayonara.
I'll put a hat on, and I will revel in the joy of winning multiple championships.
Gotcha. Also on this DeAndre Hopkins front, DeAndre Hopkins tweeted something along the lines of, to whatever receiving room I end up joining, I'm going to make your job easier. And Tyreek Hill commented on that. Did you see the video of Tyreek Hill and Drew Rosenhaus today? Did you see this one?
Another video from these two? Or from at least Tyreek? I did not.
You didn't see what they were doing?
No, I did not.
Okay. Well, thankfully, no children were harmed this time around. But
this time around.
Oh, there's been a lot of the past about Tyreek Hill, if you recall, years ago. Now, I'm not saying any of that was caught on video, but there was a lot of allegations thrown the way of Tyreek Hill. Tyreek Hill and Drew Rosenhaus are on a boat together. And from what I gather, they were fishing, and Tyreek Hill caught a shark. And I guess Tyreek Hill was, like, struggling to, you know, rightfully so, reel in the shark for 45 minutes. So the shark is on the hook. Drew Rosenhaus jumps in. Now, the shark is on the hook. I get that. But what happens if that fishing rod breaks? Or what happens if that hook somehow releases from where the shark is and you're right next to that shark? Now, I know we see Drew Rosenhaus every year at the Super Bowl. If next year we're in Las Vegas, I got to say to him, are you the biggest moron on the planet? Because what the heck are you doing? And he has a beautiful family, bunch of little kids. You're playing with fire there. If you're, I don't care what the shark is hooked onto, you are lining up right next to the shark. And I give credit to Tyreek Hill, where one of the camera guys was like, or fishermen were like, you want to jump in? And he's like, hell no. But this video of Drew Rosenhaus is the definition of insanity. Have you seen the video yet, Hickey?
I have, yes. I love sharks, so I do know
do
a
mean you
thing
love
or
sharks?
Two about them.
You love
Shark
watching,
Week?
Yeah, sharks on television.
Well, yeah. I'm not saying I wouldn't do this if I'm Drew Rosenhaus, so especially in the middle of the ocean.
Say,
I got to fear the middle of the ocean.
There's a difference going to an aquarium and seeing a shark. This guy is jumping in the water right next to the shark.
Now, I don't know this exact species, but I don't think you got to be too worried about it eating you.
Oh, stop.
It's not a tiger shark. It's not a bull shark. It's not a great white shark. If that was any of the three, first of all, Tyreek Hill's not reeling it in. It's reeling him out into the ocean.
Probably.
And you're going to get eaten. Looks about 6 feet, so about his size. Again, I'm not saying I'm doing it. I'm not. He definitely could be risking his life if it was definitely of other breeds of shark. This one looks pretty,
let me just ask you a
in
question.
Shark standards, harmless.
Shark expert, let me just ask you a question, and maybe I'll sound like the biggest idiot in the world. You are poking the bear there. If that shark gets free, I don't care what the breed is and what you know about the breed. Don't you think that shark is fighting back when you almost took its life? Just out of fear and just out of panic?
Now, two things. Number one, it does look tired, so maybe he knew. Maybe they were fishing in and wrestling on the rod for hours, and this shark has just given up. Also, here's a fun fact for you. You turn sharks on their back, they go docile. Lights are out. Now, he's not fully on his back. Kind of three quarters on the side a little bit at times. It's more restful than it would be if it was stomach down. That's what I'll say.
I don't care what you just told me, how much of that is true or false. You couldn't pay me to jump in the ocean and get next to that shark. Because the sharks, if there's one there, do you think there's multiple in the area, you would assume?
With this kind of shark, you would think they're pack hunters, yes.
Okay. That's another reason why I'm not jumping in.
Also,
what's your... go ahead. Sorry.
I was going to say, if you're Drew Rosenhaus, you might be the worst agent on the planet if you say, hey, Tyreek, come help me.
Well, he didn't say that. He didn't say that. That was a fisherman.
He is smart to say, don't worry, Tyreek, I'll take the bullet here. I'll go in the water and get the shark. You stay in the boat. Yeah. Far away. Keep those hands safe, all right?
And he posts this publicly. I know everyone survived from what we realized, but you post this publicly? That's one of those things I think you just let urban legend kind of grow and have people talk about. I don't need to post this for the world to see. He's got a wife. What do you think happens when his wife sees him tonight? Like, I think they have like three or four children now, all young kids. If I was his wife, I'm not happy with him tonight. I'm saying sleep on the couch. After you jump into an ocean and basically wrestle a shark. Yeah, have you ever had any crazy wildlife encounters?
No, I've not traveled much out of the Northeast, and the Northeast is not exactly a ton of wildlife. The closest thing, I guess, the craziest thing I've seen is a seal up close. Otherwise, in the wild.
That's not dangerous, though.
Well, sea lions are huge. You got to stay out of the way of a sea lion.
But hold on. Like, were you at one of those exhibits, like, at, what is it, Disney World with Shamu or whatever?
No. This is in San Diego on the rocks. You go into their habitat. There's no cage. There's no fence.
Okay. That's what I thought you were talking about.
No, come on. But otherwise, not a lot of crazy. There's once a bear in the Poconos I saw.
Bear Poconos, my encounter. So I was a counselor at a sleepaway camp, and about like four times a summer, because I was what they called senior staff, so I ran, how do you refer to this? An age division. So I was in charge of all the 7th and 8th grade boys, or like 55 of them, and you have certain sectors in the camp. So if you were in the senior staff, you had to be the head checker at night, where you would make sure the campers aren't running out of the bunk all throughout the camp. If someone had to go to the infirmary, you would take them there. And then also you have to make sure all the drunk counselors that are coming back from the bar, make sure that they're okay and get back to their cabins as well. So if you were head checker, you usually order something in. So I got wings from this tremendous wings place that I've talked about before called Barryville Hotel. Just amazing wings. And I went in my cabin, I ate the wings, and I didn't want to stink up my cabin that I was living in and throw the wing sauce in the trash, so I threw it outside of the bunk in a trash can. The next thing you know, I go into the shower, and I hear this noise, and I'm like, what the heck is going on? And it was a bear that bulldozed through the trash can to get the wing sauce. So people saw the bear. I get out of the shower, you know, put some clothes on, go outside. They're like, oh, there was a bear right there. And then I didn't see the bear. The bear leaves. Later that night, the bear comes back. And it's right to the booth where all the counselors are signing in. And I locked that door right there. But that bear, we were like nose to nose from one another. And thankfully, I closed the door and then the bear ran away. But that was probably the most frightened I've ever was. And it was one large bear. And I thought that was it. I thought the bear was going to attack me, and I was absolutely donezo. It was a very scary experience.
Those bears like raccoons. They want the garbage. Don't want humans. Ooh. Unless it's a mother bear and her cubs, and you stay far away.
Yeah. Well, then you're dead. You're not here to tell the story, if we're being honest. Skunks, too. Very afraid of skunks. Because then you get sprayed by a skunk. That's just miserable. I'd rather just get mauled to death by a bear than have to smell like a skunk for a day or two.
I'll take the skunk smell.
I don't know. Man, that's just, I feel like that never actually wears away. It is a Zach Gelb show on CBS Sports Radio. What is it? The tomato juice that you have to bathe in is what they say?
I was trying to remember. I don't remember. But it's something like that.
Okay. I don't think I want to bathe in tomato juice and smell like a skunk. But anyway, we come on back with a little college football fix. Elijah Warner, son of Kurt Warner, quarterback for the Temple Owls. He's going to join us next.
You're listening to The Zach Gelb Show. We miss college football.
Bennett takes the snap and the shotgun, throws for the corner. Brock Bowers one-on-one. Caught! Touchdown! He ate him alive! Falls down into the end zone. Six more for Georgia.
We can't wait for the 2023 season.
Caleb Williams throws the fade in the corner. Oh, God! Touchdown, Trojans!
And we're counting down the days to kickoff.
Are we there yet?
No.
Are we there yet?
I said no.
Are we there yet?
What's wrong with your ears?
Here is your college football fix, only on the Zach Gelb Show.
74 days away until Temple kicks off its 2023 season against Akron. I'm actually wearing a Temple polo right now, my alma mater. And Elijah Warner, in his freshman year for the Owls, won the American Athletic Conference Rookie of the Year. The Temple QB clearly comes from a great family of football lineage, with his father, Kurt Warner, starring in the NFL and being a Hall of Fame quarterback. His older brother, Cade, just wrapped up a very successful career at Kansas State, where he won a Big 12 championship. And I'm really excited to see the sophomore year of Elijah Warner with the Owls, and he joins us right now. EJ, it's Zach Gelb here in New York City. Appreciate the time. Thanks for doing this, and how are you?
I'm doing good. I appreciate you for having me. This is a really cool experience.
So how do you look back at last year? I know that you weren't the starter right out of the gate for game number one, but then quickly made your way onto the field and made a big impact. How do you look back at your freshman year at Temple?
Yeah, really just grateful for everything that happened. I mean, going into the season, not really sure how it was all going to play out, not sure if I was going to ever see the field, and just got that opportunity come week two, and just grateful that the coaches believed in me and that my teammates believed in me, and I got to go out there and show what I could do. It was a fun season just to be out there with my guys. And basically just get a little taste of college football and hopefully more leading to come here soon this season.
When you get an opportunity, you got to take advantage of it. You were able to do that. I know that it wasn't always smooth sailing, but for the most part, it did seem like a seamless transition. Why did it appear to be so easy once you got on the field and you were named the starter?
I think I just prepared like I was the starter from the day I got here. I think no matter what I was in the depth chart, I watched enough film, I practiced, I prepared like I was going to go in the game. And when I finally got that opportunity, I was comfortable and confident in what I could do. And I think that showed in how just my preparation basically prepared me for that moment.
Elijah Warner here with us. Now, I was nervous once the season ended because you had a very successful season, especially with your last name and the way that you played on the field. And with NIL, I'm like, uh-oh, maybe he's going to be going elsewhere. Were you ever close to leaving Temple and going into the transfer portal?
I think just today in today's college football, everyone always thinks about the portal and people leaving, going to a different school. But really, I just fell in love with Temple since I've been here and fell in love with the people here specifically. I think just the last season, just kind of get to play with the guys and kind of get a grow relationship with them that I couldn't really leave. I wanted to stay here and help build this program, help build this up with Coach Drayton. And I'm so definitely glad that I stayed and excited for this season.
Where do you think the program is at right now? Because it wasn't that long ago, and I was a student at Temple, where they beat Penn State for the first time in 74 years. They had College Game Day there for a big matchup and a close matchup against Notre Dame. Where is the trajectory of this program at now under Stan Drayton?
Yeah, I think we're just building this up. I think, obviously, we had a few down years there. So just trying to build up in the bottom and basically grow this team from inside out. I think we've got a lot of good players who are hungry. We've watched those games. We've seen what Temple has been in the past, and we kind of just want to strive to get back to that point and kind of bring Pembroke back to what it was. And I think just a lot of hungry players who are excited to show what they can do. We have a lot of talent here, a really good culture we're trying to build. And just, yeah, I think definitely not there yet, but we're definitely on the right track and excited to hopefully show everyone what we can do this year.
With the experience that you got in year one, EJ Warner, what did you really keen in on and focus on this offseason to try to get the best version of yourself in your sophomore year?
Yeah, the biggest thing was just changing my body. Just coming in as an 18-year-old freshman, it's hard just playing against people who are so much older than you. I think I wasn't really physically strong or mature enough where I needed to be. So that's been a big focal point this offseason in the weight room, with my diet, just kind of getting bigger and getting that extra strength I need to basically survive at this level and perform to my best ability. And then just trying to be better as a leader. I think last year coming in as a young guy, it's hard to just step in week two and try to be that vocal leader. But I think now that I've had this season under my belt and had this offseason with the guys, I can really, they trust me and they trust that I put in the preparation that I know what I'm doing and I can go in there and I know how to get on people and I know how to lead better than I did last year.
And I also think towards the end of the year, what you were able to do up against Houston, where you threw for 486 yards and three touchdowns, and then ECU, where you threw for 527 yards and put up five touchdowns, it just showed the progress that you were making. How do you kind of look back at both those games and what you were able to do individually?
Yeah, just super fun experience. I think throughout the course of the year, you just saw our team get better and better. You saw us get more fast with the details. You saw us come together as a team. I think that showed on the field. I definitely got more and more comfortable just with the level of play and the speed of the game that it kind of got to show in those last few weeks and against those two teams. And those were some really fun games to go out there, some high-scoring shootouts just to go put up some points on the board and throw the ball around.
Elijah Warner here with us. I've known your dad for a while, tremendous guy, and clearly raised you the right way. I remember when you were actually going on your visit at Temple, he was asking me a few questions about the school. But for you, what really made you fall in love? I just love to hear this as an alum. What made you fall in love with Temple, and why did you want to go there?
Yeah, I think it was just the people. There's so many good people here, and they have the best for us kids in mind. It's not always just about on the field. I mean, you don't play football forever, and they really have an interest in caring for us off the field and what we want to do in our lives and how we are as people and kind of building us as full men on and off the field. I think that's a big part of it, where just fell in love with everyone around here and wanted to come kind of grow this thing with them and basically build this team up from where we were. So definitely been fun just getting to know everybody and kind of being embraced in this culture, and definitely glad with my decision.
How do you use your dad as a resource to kind of help you navigate all the things that are going on right now in college and trying to get the best version of E.J. Warner when you step on that field?
Yeah, I mean, he's really helpful. He's been through so much and seen so much in the game that really any sort of situation I'm in, I'm kind of asking for advice. I mean, all day long, I'm asking him questions, calling him. If anything comes up, I can hit him real fast. And he loves talking ball. He loves talking with me. So anytime I get that chance to kind of pick his brain and get to know what he knows and what he went through, it's definitely cool just to have that person kind of lean back on and basically humble me in different situations and teach me different things that I've used on and off the field here at college.
How did you fall in love with football, by the way?
Yeah, I think I kind of played a few sports growing up and didn't really know which one I liked more. And then just in high school, I think that grind of just showing what it needs to do to be great at the next level kind of made me fall in love with it. Obviously, like you said, my dad and brother both played, and that probably played a huge part in me wanting to do it as well. But just love the game. I think there's so much on the field that's awesome about the game, but I really love the part off the field where the X's and O's, the breaking down film, the stuff that I've really fallen in love with that you can do any time of the day. You don't always need 11 guys out on the field to work on it. I think that's really just the part I've fallen in love with and definitely helped take my game to the next level.
But when did you realize that your dad was a pretty big deal? Because I know you were born towards the end of your father's pro football career.
Yeah, I mean, I remember being at the Super Bowl. He was with the Cardinals.
Yeah.
And I was just playing video games on my little DS, just not really caring for what he was doing, not really caring for football at the time. And it's crazy to look back, just how much I missed just being a young kid, just trying to live my life, not really worried about football. But I think just over the past few years, kind of like just learning about his career and learning what he went through and basically just falling in love with the game myself kind of made me realize what all he done and what all he accomplished. And then once he was inducted into the Hall of Fame, that kind of really wrapped it up full circle about how actually good he was at the sport and at playing quarterback. We always try to give him a hard time when we can, but he's definitely a special player and fun to look back at what he did.
And your father, I know he did not go to Temple, but he kind of fits that Temple tough brand that the Owls always preach.
Yeah, for sure. His story is well documented, but
yeah.
He went through so much and definitely had so many hard times in his life and kind of fought through it and kept pushing. Obviously made it to where he did. So I think that fits our Temple mindset that it doesn't matter what we have or what we're going through, that there's brighter stuff on the other side if we just put our head down and work. So definitely fits, and excited to be a part of that culture now.
The movie had to be pretty damn cool for your family, right?
Yeah, it was awesome. It was fun to see the whole process. It was a long time in the making, and just to finally see it being filmed and finally come out in theaters and get to watch my dad and watch my family kind of enjoy that. And I actually just watched it again the other night on TV, just kind of looking back and basically getting to see his story, first-person point of view, where, I mean, I wasn't alive for most of it. So just kind of got to get a picture of it in that sort of way and just watch all he's been through and let him share his story. There's so much messages outside of football that he went through that he can share with people and inspire people and help motivate them. And those are really cool to see the fans react to when they finally got to see the movie and just how many people it impacted around the world.
Just naturally, so many people are going to bring up your father when they talk about you. But if people don't know who Elijah Warner is and they weren't able to watch Temple football, just what do you bring to a football team, not only on the field, but also off the field as well?
Yeah, I think I just have a chip on my shoulder. Obviously, my dad did so many big things in his career. And I think in high school, I mean, I suffered through it a lot. I had a few injuries and kind of was under-recruited. So I definitely want to prove myself and going out there every time just to compete. I'm a competitor and just love, no matter what it is, just to go out there and try to give my best to help my team win. So I think that's what you'll see on and off the field. It's just a hard worker who always wants to go into a game fully prepared, never wants to leave anything on the field, kind of just go out there and give it his all, and I think motivate the people around him to do the same.
Yeah, I can't wait for this football season for Temple. I'm going to be hanging out with the Temple Temperers, those great, crazy guys. So I'll be checking out the Rutgers game, probably come down for the Miami game. I was there for UMass last year. What can I expect as we get set for year number two under Stan Drayden?
Yeah, I think you'll just see a team that's fighting. I think no matter what the scoreboard shows, no matter who we are, I think just going out there and showing that we'll put our best foot forward. I think you see a team that will fight for each other. We talk a lot about family here. I think that's starting to show where we definitely – You can only achieve so much when you play for yourself, but when you play for the person next to you, I think you can achieve greater things. So I just hope you see a team that keeps fighting no matter what and hopefully comes out with a better season than last year.
How do you use your brother as a resource? Because he just wrapped up, like we were saying, a great career at Kansas State, culminates with that Big 12 championship, now trying to make the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. How do you kind of utilize your big brother to help you out here?
Yeah, his story is cool as well. He started as a walk-on at Nebraska, and he kind of fought his way up the depth chart, became a captain there, and then transferred to Kansas State and won a Big 12 championship and became a captain there. So just showing, like, it doesn't matter where you start, it's about where you finish. He definitely started not where he wanted to, but he's definitely made the most of it, and he's a cool resource to have. He's a different perspective because he plays receiver, which is actually really cool and really helpful. I can kind of lean on him for different things, ask different questions. I just called him before this and was asking him for some of his receiver tape that I can learn from and help teach my guys around me. So just a cool different perspective to have from him, and excited for his future in the NFL, and can't wait to see where he goes.
It's so neat to be able to talk to you right now, EJ Warner, when you're just getting ready for your sophomore year. Whenever your football journey does end, what do you hope to accomplish, and what do you hope people say about EJ Warner?
That's a good question. I just want to know for myself, accomplish that I gave it everything I had. So many people can only go so far in the sport, and I hopefully I achieve great things, but at the end of the day, I just want people to know that I gave my best foot forward and put in as much work as I can. And yeah, I just want people to know that I tried my best and really, really hopefully made myself better, but also made the people around me better, and hopefully elevated the team to do better than what they thought they could.
That's probably
my main goal.
Yeah, well, love watching you play last year. Kick ass this year. We're going to be rooting for you, and really do appreciate the time today.
Awesome. Thank you for having me. Go out.
You're listening to The Zach Gelb Show.
It is The Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. We'll talk about Bob Huggins and who could be replacing him at West Virginia in just a bit after his idiotic arrest as he was driving. I was drinking while driving and just something that you can't do while he suffered a DUI. And as I said yesterday, if he has a problem, I hope he gets the help that he needs, but I have no sympathy for anybody that gets behind the wheel while they are intoxicated, and only bad things could happen. And for Bob Huggins' case, he's lucky that something worse didn't happen either to somebody else or himself as well. But before we get to that, just since we were talking about it kind of in jest right before we got to EJ Warner, where we were talking about how crazy Drew Rosenhaus was jumping into the ocean while him and Tyreek Hill were fishing and a shark was right there and they caught a shark. This has come out during the break that Tyreek Hill is now under police investigation over an alleged assault and battery in Miami. This courtesy of TMZ. Tyreek Hill is under police investigation, TMZ Sports has confirmed, after the NFL star was accused of getting physical with somebody in Miami on Sunday. Cops confirmed the probe to us on Tuesday, though they did not disclose further details of the case, only saying they were investigating an alleged assault battery involving the Dolphins player. According to Local 10 News, however, the alleged incident happened at the Hallover Marina after Hill got into a dispute with an employee of a charter company at the popular South Florida boating spot. The outlet reported Tuesday the 29-year-old receiver was accused of putting his hands on the employee at some point during the altercation. Hill has been seen on social media on boats multiple times this week. On Father's Day, he shared a Snapchat of him while out on the water on actually his Instagram story. And on Tuesday, his agent, Drew Rosenhaus, showed the two were at sea fishing near a shark, which we talked about earlier. But neither Hill nor Rosenhaus have publicly commented on the police probe. Hill has been the subject of police investigation before, most notably back in 2019. He was named in a child abuse report, though he was never charged with the crime in that case. Hill has become arguably the best wideout in the NFL last season. His first with Miami, he tallied 1,710 receiving yards and 7 receiving touchdowns, and the story is continuing to develop over at TMZ. So all we know right now is that he's accused of getting physical with somebody in Miami, and cops confirmed the probe to TMZ on Tuesday. And according to Local News 10, the alleged incident happened at the marina after Hill got into a dispute with an employee of a charter company at the popular South Florida boating spot. So, Hickey, I guess we'll see what comes out of that. A lot of that information is vague, but you see the video that Drew Rosenhaus put out there, and I don't know what actually happened there, but if you think if something serious was about to happen right around the corner, with your client that you, well, first off, you don't think you'd be jumping in the water and wrestling a shark to begin with, but you don't think you'd be putting that video out there publicly if you knew that this was coming right around the corner. So I guess we'll have to wait and see what actually goes on here.
Yeah, you hope you wouldn't be that dumb. And I don't think Drew Rosenhaus is that dumb. But again, also, was he there when this happened? We don't know. Like I said, there's not a lot of details, so I'd assume so. But Tyreek Hill, man, it's very easy to stay out of trouble. And for whatever reason, he continues to kind of flirt with trouble.
Did you see, by the way, talking about trouble, what Bob Huggins' daughter said? How Bob Huggins' daughter says, and I get it, right? It's your dad. By nature, you're going to defend your dad. But when you're blowing .210 while driving, that's just something you can't defend. That he doesn't have an alcohol problem. I don't know if he has an alcohol problem or not. This is now his second DUI. But the reason why he had all those cans in the car is because he's a recycling enthusiast. Is that the worst excuse I've ever heard? She said something along the lines of, people that really know my father knows how much he loves to recycle, and that this is just getting sensationalized by the media as if he had a bunch of beer cans in his car and he was drinking while actually driving. Your father blew a .21, and he had beer cans in the car. And all of a sudden now he's a recycling enthusiast? He may like to recycle, but this sounds as if you're just making an excuse and ignoring what actually took place here. I've heard some dumb excuses, Hickey. I don't think I've ever heard anything as dumb as that.
That's like, I don't really care. Like, that could be true for all I know.
Yeah.
And he, in fact, drank all the beer at the bar, saved it, goes, oh, I want to take these cans home and 5 cents, I'll recycle them. .214 is still .214, no matter if he drank the beers in the car or before he got in the car.
Yeah.
There's no excuse. There's no, oh, it's not that bad, trust me, because all the beers drank before he got in the car.
Yeah.
It doesn't make a difference.
Great.
You were drunk driving. That is it. I don't care when it happened. You did it. Nothing you could say can make it better. There's no excuse you could say.
And I get it, right? That is your father. And when the whole world is piling on your father, when everyone is allowed to do so, and Bob Huggins, the only one he has to blame is himself here, because what he's done the last month with the homophobic comments on the radio station and then what happened over the weekend, the only one to blame is Bob Huggins. But when you see your dad getting attacked by everyone, okay, a daughter is naturally, or any family member is going to naturally defend their father, but like in this case, your defense is he's a recycling enthusiast? Just sit this one out. That's what I would do. I understand your dad, deservedly so, is getting dragged through the mud. And this is not the way that you want a dad to wrap up his career. Well, don't drink and drive. You make all that money. Get a car service. Get a driver. If you don't want to spend those bucks, which you have enough money, even getting the $1 million in salary slash, call an Uber. Okay? It's just so stupid when I read something like that. Now, I'll bring up something that John Fanta said with us the other day. And I actually agree with John. If I'm West Virginia in finding a replacement for Bob Huggins, I think they're too late in the game. Now, if you get the guy that you want in your candidate list and he wants to leave his current job, fine. And that is an attractive job. But I kind of think the best course of action for West Virginia now is just name an interim coach, see how this year goes, and then you work on the full-time replacement at the end of the season. Or if you get someone in the middle of the season, if that's the way that you want to go. But I think this late in the game, Hickey, I don't know if you're necessarily going to get the best candidate available. Now, we've seen guys, right, before jump jobs and recruit people there and then say, oh, this is the best interest for my family and I'm going to go. But this late in the game, if I'm running that search, I would almost just name a guy on the staff as the interim coach and you go from there and not look to hire someone full-time until the end of this upcoming basketball season.
Agreed. There's nothing you can do right now if you're a new coach. You can't really bring anyone else in. It's too late for that. You really can't change your system because, you know, training camp's going to be right on the corner. There's really nothing you can actually do in year one anyway that will make a tangible difference. So promote someone on the staff, maybe the lead assistant, kind of try to keep this group for this year together as much as you can. And then, like I said, end of the year, really open it up and then try to find the full-time guy for real once you actually have a legitimate pool and maybe, who knows, someone gets surprise fired or someone that's not interested now all of a sudden is interested 7 months from now. Just put yourself in a position where you can get the best candidate and don't rush it just because you want to get someone right now, even though it's June.
Now, how about this? The only thing that would deter us from that plan, John Beilein, who's 70 years old, we know the success he had at Michigan, once was the coach of West Virginia. He's 70. I can't imagine of a long tenure. What happens if John Beilein said, I want to help you out for a few years? Do you maybe just make him a placeholder for 3 years and then develop someone on his staff that's young to eventually take over after him? Would you consider that at all? Just wondering.
I mean, I guess I wouldn't, just because, like, it's still like, if he's going to be there for 3 years, I mean, I don't know. I can't say no to the Canada pool now, but if there's someone out there that's actually interested in this job that's legitimate, that could be here for 30 years, let alone three, I would still keep it open instead of kind of closing it off now for John Beilein for a short amount of time and then 3-5 years from now opening it back up.
Now, here's the five coaches I came up with. Five, Jeff Bowles, who I think is very underrated as a marvelous and has done a really good job at Ohio. Four would be Richie McKay, who I like a lot at Liberty. Three, Matt Langel at Colgate. Andy Kennedy, I think that's going to be a popular name potentially for this job. Remember, he coached with Huggins at Cincinnati, had to take over for Huggins too, then had a long run at Ole Miss, currently is at UAB, and has done a really good job there. And then number one would be Pat Kelsey, who I believe is going to be an enormous star in this sport. And he is just due to get a big job. He has a great personality. He's a tremendous coach. He won at Winthrop and is now winning at the College of Charleston. Just got an NCAA tournament this past year. I would take a look at Pat Kelsey, and that may be a name a year from now that's really going to emerge. But those are five names that I put together for the next West Virginia coach. Bill Ryder, right here of CBS Sports Radio and CBS Sports HQ, will join us next.